Welcome, everyone. We have a number of important issues that we will be dealing with this morning. We're going to go to the public hearing on Senate Bill 260A because we have people that here that have other commitments. So I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 260A, have the staff read the summary, and we are going to take partial testimony at this time.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 260A prohibits insurers from using credit history or insurance score for consumer applying for or renewing personal property or casualty insurance when making underwriting or rating decisions. We do have a dash A4 amendment today, which replaces the bill, same subject area, and you have a revised staff measure summary to reflect that. It modifies definitions of adverse underwriting as a number of definitions for consumer credit histories. So far, specifies requirements for an adverse underwriting decisions based on credit history or insurance score. Requires insurance in such situations to provide notice and initial adverse underwriting decisions. Specifies requirements related to credit history and insurance score for insurance issuing personal insurance policies. Allows consumer receiving a less than favorable rating category based on the credit history or insurance score to request the insurer to re-rate the consumer based on initial application. Prohibits the insurer from using credit history to determine personal insurance eligibility premiums or rates unless file scoring models they file with the director of DCBS. It also addresses some issues in regards to retroactive and grandfathering in some folks who have already had less than favorable rates issues. The bill does have some conflicts with these amendments, and we will need some conflict amendments, but those are not yet ready.
And we are, are expecting those on Friday, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, committee, you have the 15-page amendment in front of you, and I'm going to call our first honored guest. It's Senator Hannan. Please come forward.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, my name is Len Hannan, State Senator, District 3, and I'm here in support of Senate Bill 260 as it was amended in the Senate. I understand there's some additional amendments that you're going to be considering here in the committee, and I haven't had time to review all these, but anything that would certainly enhance the bill, I would support. Madam Chair, members, the reason I support this bill, and let me first disclaim any potential conflict of interest that I may have as an insurance agent. I personally do not deal in property and casualty. I am licensed in it, but I don't deal in that particular area. But it has troubled me that for a period of time, insurance companies have used credit scoring as a determining factor, one of many that is used to determine a person's rating for insurance purposes. And the analogy that I would use is if you were to go into a bank and apply for a home loan and they asked you how many speeding tickets you had. And I don't know what speeding tickets has to do with your home mortgage. Same with credit scoring, dealing with your auto insurance or your property and casualty insurance. And it creates a situation where a person may, in fact, have a good outstanding credit rating and still gets an increase. I had a situation in Southern Oregon where a constituent in the Applegate area went in to purchase her insurance and received a substantial rate increase on their automobile insurance. They contacted their agent, and their agent responded by saying, well, part of the information was based upon credit scoring. This agent then went on further to explain to the constituent that the person had the right to ask for a copy of their credit report. They did so. Their credit report was probably in the higher bracket as far as credit history and credit background. And they went back to the insurance agent, and the insurance agent contacted the company and was told, well, it was a factor, but it wasn't the only factor. They begin to dance around on the head of a pin and say, well, it really wasn't, but yet it is. And the question it begs is, why are we using this as a factor? I don't care if a person has made a mistake in their credit history and has bad judgment in one situation. They shouldn't be held permanently responsible for making a mistake or having a bad situation in one time or another. And so that reason I'm here to support the bill and support any effort that we can to curb this effort to use credit scoring as a factor in determining an insured's ability to obtain property and casualty insurance. And I'd be happy to respond to any questions that there might be.
Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, the amendment that we have before us, the A4 amendment, leaves in place the use of credit rating for initial insurance applications. Is that amendment one that would be inconsistent with your bill as it came from the Senate?
Well, the question that I would have to ask is, why would you use it for the initial purchase of insurance but not use it in the renewal? And so the question that it begs is, I think you need to look at the overall scope. Is it something that needs to be delineated and discarded in its entirety, whether it's first purchase or renewal? If a person is penalized going in the first time, what is to say that they're not penalized the second time when they're renewed?
Senator, I have several questions. I'm told that the credit scoring came in the 90s. It's a fairly recent concept. Is that true?
Yes.
And would you know how many states have dealt with this issue in their
state? You know, Madam Chair, I don't, and I apologize that I don't have that number for you, but I'm sure somebody from the Insurance Commissioner's Office might be able to provide that information to you.
Thank you. Can you tell me, prior to this coming in, how risk was determined primarily? How do they weight different aspects of things they consider when they determine risk?
There's a number of factors that are used in determining certainly your driving history, your risk, your occupation, your health lifestyle. All these things are factored in and determining risk, because if you potentially place yourself at a greater risk, certainly you should be paying a higher premium to guarantee yourself protection against that risk. And I have no difficulty with that at all.
Thank you. And can you tell me, for a person that doesn't have a credit card, maybe they pay all cash like a number of our elderly citizens do.
Mm-hmm.
Does that rate in a credit scoring situation, would that be a detriment to that person?
You know, Madam Chair, I'm going to venture to say it would, because I had a person in my own district one time who applied for an OLCC license and was turned down because this person did not have any credit cards and was turned down for a liquor license on an application because every transaction this individual conducted was on a cash basis. This person grew up in the Depression and had little faith in the banks and conducted everything pretty much on a cash-as-you-go basis. And I think many times we don't take into consideration that there's a generation there that quite frankly, sometimes do everything on a cash basis and don't have credit and are sometimes penalized for perhaps not having a credit history.
Other questions, Representative Shoffler.
Thank you. as I read this, it makes it sound, and I just looked at it, and I said, it does make it sound like they would use a credit history for the initial policy, but then and then the renewal would use the first credit rating. I don't know. That's the way I read this. I don't know if that's what you...
Yeah, Madam Chair, I again apologize. I was just handed this amendment prior to the meeting here this morning.
That was my question, though. But, excuse me, Senator, I do have a question. The folks that have good driving records and good credit ratings, I'm not an insurance agent, but do they get a discount? And is there a possibility that if we remove the credit rating part of it, which I have no problem with, to be honest with you, is there a possibility that some of that discount could be lost and turning out to be a higher premium for some folks? Is that true?
Madam Chair, as representative, you might hear that argument based upon that position from an insurance company's perspective. But the idea and the principle of insurance is to spread risk. It's not to determine that you're more credit worthy than I am.
Representative Kitts.
Hey, Senator. I've got a question and then a follow-up. It seems that anything that we can do in the insurance industry, not we as if I'm in it, but in the insurance industry, to identify potential loss or people that would be a potential loss or high risk and pool those folks into certain categories for whatever reason, as long as it's proven that that's the case, would be a benefit to the masses out there that maybe don't get in car wrecks or aren't high risk, that would seem to be picking up the cost in the back end for those that are. So if proven, and I don't know that it can be or if what the other side is going to offer as testimony, but if proven that a credit score had a direct correlation with a high risk person, would you deem that to be appropriate if the other side could, you know, prove upon the initial that was a risk factor?
Madam Chair, Representative, if it could be proven and it could be totally correlated that there is a greater exposure of risk based upon your credit history, I think that's something that the companies need to argue. But as I stated in my opening comment, I think you'd find it very difficult along the lines of a banker, as an example, who decided to increase your mortgage payment by 2 percentage points based upon your driving record for a home loan.
Okay. Follow-up? Are insurance companies still able to use gender and age to determine a risk?
Madam Chair, Representative, that was prohibited by legislation we considered in this legislative assembly.
So they can't look at their age or gender?
No.
Okay.
Other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much, Senator. It's been, we've learned a great deal.
Thank you.
Okay, we will call Lou Barris next, Clackamas County.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lou Barris. I'm the Executive Director of Christian Coalition, representing thousands of people here in the state of Oregon. Some of my members have been calling about this bill, and it affected them in certain areas if they have a credit score. Some of our members, especially in Klamath Falls, I have a number of calls from Klamath Falls, as you know, and any lack of rain or drought and so forth, their credit has been affected. And I understand that 92% of the insurance companies now run credit reports on the profile. So they have a clean record, no tickets, no accidents, and the potential of their insurance, and some lives went up their insurance because of their credit. And we're concerned about the single moms, you know, that's struggling to survive. I mean, they have it tough the way it is, and then they have to they have a poor credit score, and their insurance goes up with no traffic tickets or no accidents. Families with excessive medical bills. And so the people that are members of our organizations is concerned, you know, about this. And there's one thing that they mention is about the correlation. They say the correlation, you will hear probably a correlation that it went a 54% increase in correlation between credit scores. I believe what it is, it's actually 4% is the effective rate. And then 96% of the people, okay, because it went up from 11 to 7, I understand, which is 4%. But that's 4% of the total, which is 96% of the people could be affected by the increase in the insurance rate. So it's only a 4% effective rate and not a marginal rate that the insurance company will try to come. They'll probably come later on. And the correlation, they're using the wrong correlation. Also, the credit profile may affect the minorities, poor, and the elderly. And so I think as citizens and organizations, we need to protect those people that can help cannot help themselves. It's an interesting fact that the majority of the auto and home insurance agents are strongly opposed to credit scoring. I've been in small business all my life, and I look at the agents as small business. And sometimes maybe I look at the large insurance companies in a different light. So the small businessmen and those who are writing and are into contact with the people are against this credit scoring because it affects people. And the final thing, if credit scoring is banned, I don't believe one insurance company will go out of business. Go back to the old system. Go back where what they have been doing in the past. Thank you. If there's any questions.
Representative Kitts, and then Merkley.
Lou, thank you for being here today. I don't think the contention, and I could be wrong, is that insurance companies would go out of business. In fact, I think just quite the opposite. I would assume that they would raise rates on everybody to make sure that if you're not going to be able to target specific folks of risk, that they're going to blanket everybody to make sure they cover everybody. In case, you know, because you're not able to determine who the risk pool is in this situation, so we're going to charge everybody more because we can't. So I don't think that, and I could be wrong, is that an argument that you're hearing on the other side that insurance companies will go bankrupt?
Madam Chair, Representative Kitts, I don't believe that is an issue about, you know, insurance companies, you know, going out of business.
Okay.
That's not an issue at all.
Okay.
The issue is fairness and so forth, and the correlation is not proven to the fact. And if there's other risk, if you had an accident, if you have tickets and so forth, that is legitimate areas that you could look at by raising the insurance and so forth. But credit scores, I don't think it's not.
Follow up.
Lou, I don't know if you know the answer. I don't know how in-depth in the insurance business you are, but do you know if insurance companies can still ask you what type of car you drive for determining insurance?
As far as I know, a car does have an effect. As far as I know, you could ask some insurance agents here. If you have a fast car, a Corvette, you know, that has, you know, over 400 horsepower and so forth, and you're driving, you know, a Toyota, or I'm sure there's a difference in insurance because of the cost of the vehicle, but I think it's speed and cost of the vehicle. That's what I understand, but maybe insurance companies can.
Thank you.
Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've heard the argument that using credit scoring is beneficial for insurance companies because they can identify affluent or professional individuals who are more likely to buy other products. So in essence, they're giving an affluent person a discount in order to bring them in and hopefully sell additional products to them. Is that part of the insurance company's argument for using the credit scoring, and is that a reasonable strategy?
Madam Chair, Representative Merkley, I'm not sure you're going to have to ask an insurance company on this, but I'm refinancing my home and a rental property and so forth, and so I took my credit scores. They're going by my credit score, and I went to there's three credit rating companies. So I talked to them, and he said, "Well, here's how you could lower your score. I mean, raise your score." He says, "You got a credit card here you haven't been using, but it has a $10,000 you could take out of it." He says, "If you take that and just wipe it away, and so you don't have any more, you'll raise your credit score by certain points." So credit scores can be manipulated. And so when you can manipulate a credit score for just doing some paperwork, say, how can you use credit scores to get insurance, especially for people that fall in a category that not of themselves, medical bills, single moms, climate falls, weather and so forth. So and their driving record and say remains the same. So I think we have to protect those type of people.
Representative Kitts.
Lou, to answer that question, if you wipe away a $10,000 credit card on your credit score, it's a $10,000 liability that you're not going to necessarily incur, and it's going to affect your debt-to-income ratio, I think, in that case, which is why it would raise your Beacon score, because you'd have less liability out there. I understand what you're saying when it comes to, I want to make sure that we continue through this dialogue, compare apples and apples and not apples and oranges. And that's where I'll leave it to the insurance companies to make the correlation between credit rating and insurance rates, and why they're able to assist or assess specific risk based on that. We'll see if they're able to do it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before we go on, I want to announce that our last bill, Senate Bill 896, we will not be hearing. If anybody's here for that bill, that has been moved to Friday. Okay, I'm going to begin calling people up in panels so as to make best use of our time. I'm going to call Joe Schaefer, Washington County, Dean DeLauren, and Steve Dixon.
Good morning.
Who wants to be? Let's go with Joe first.
Okay. My name is Joe Schaefer. I live in Washington County. And from what I've heard this morning regarding Senate Bill 260, we've heard some more general things about it. I'd like to go through and give you some specific examples of what I've been dealing with for the past couple of months. It is not over yet because I just received some new information in the mail on Monday. But 2 months ago, approximately, I received my renewals on my insurance, and I have insurance with Safeco, and I've had that insurance with them for 5 years, and I was with them about 15 years ago for about a five-year period of time also. I've lived in Oregon for 24 years, lived in the same house, and my wife and I are empty nesters. So I got my insurance renewal for my automobile, for my earthquake insurance, and my home. About the middle of March. The renewal date is the middle of April. I didn't really pay close attention to those because I didn't think anything of it. The renewals would just come through. And about 2 weeks after I received those, about the 1st of April, I opened those and I looked at it, and my insurance for my automobiles did not increase at all. And there was a letter in there that talked about the insurance score, but there was nothing negative on that. I opened my earthquake insurance, and that did not increase at all. And there was again a letter in there telling me that they had looked at my insurance score and had no impact on my rate whatsoever. I opened my home insurance bill, and that had increased from $649 to $1,650. It was a 150% increase. And I'm looking at that and I'm going, oh, there's got to be obviously something wrong here. This is a mistake. And looking through the material that they sent, there was information on my insurance score, and they said because of these factors, of which there was a coding there, that has had an impact on your homeowner's insurance. Now, it was interesting. It didn't have any impact on my other two, but it had an impact on my homeowner's insurance. So I called my agent right away, and I said, look, this has got to be a mistake, is it not? Because I have not had any claims the last 2 years. And so they checked with Safeco and came back and said, no, that is so. Safeco says that's what your rate will be for this year. And so that got me a little, more than a little excited. So I called Safeco directly, and I spoke with them, and they said, yes, you know, there were several factors in that. One is the age of your house. And I'm thinking, you know, my house has increased by a year every year that I've had insurance. Every day, like me, it gets older. Okay? They said, you've had claims. And I checked back, and I had an eight. In the 24 years we've lived in that house, I had an $800 claim with a tree branch falling and breaking a skylight 3 years ago. So it cost $800. That is the only claim that I've had in 24 years. So the other thing they said the factor was the credit score was also a factor. And so I said, can you tell me some more information about the credit score? And they said, no. You'll have to get that from the people that we got your credit score from. That information was provided to me, and I tried to contact them. It's a company by the name of ChoicePoint. And I tried to contact them by phone, and it was interesting. It's one of those phone calls where I must have gone through seven or eight different connections and could never get a person. There was not a way. I tried three different times. You cannot talk to a person on that phone number that they gave me. So I said, well, there's got to be a website for this. So I got on the internet. Sure enough, there's a website. You cannot contact them on their website. So I'm going, this is interesting. So I wrote them a letter. And meanwhile, time is clicking to when my insurance is going to run out on my house or renew. So I finally ended up contacting ChoicePoint with a letter. And about 10 days later, right about the time that my insurance was to renew on my home, I got a letter back from them, and they said, we're sorry, but we, because what I asked for was a copy of the information that they had received from their credit reporting service. According to the information I got from Safeco, I was entitled to a copy of that because I had been adversely affected. So I said, please give me a copy of that. And they said, I'm sorry, but you can't have that because we never provided any information to Safeco. And I said, wait a minute now. What's going on here? And so there was a phone number down at the bottom and said, if your insurance, in effect saying, if your insurance is coming due real soon and you need to talk to somebody, call us at this number. So I called that number and I spoke to a person and they said, well, let me check. And so they said, what's your name and address, social security number? This sort of thing, and they searched and they said, no, we don't have any record of ever having sent Safeco any information. They said, so they came back and they said, can you give us your Oregon driver's license? They asked for. And they searched by that, no information. They searched by mother's maiden name, no information ever having been sent to Safeco. Okay, how about your wife? Are you married? Yes. Is your wife on the policy also? Yes. Can you search by her? They searched by her, same type of information. Nothing ever having been sent to Safeco. So I said, okay, fine, thank you. I thought, this something's totally not right here. So I left it for a day and called back, and I thought, maybe I'll talk to another person. Maybe that person was either brand new, didn't know how to do the search, or on the other hand, maybe it was their last day at work. They didn't want to do the search, giving them the benefit of the doubt, and I called back and kind of went through the same sequence. Didn't tell the person I had called the day before. They checked by the same, kind of the same sequence. I'm sorry, there's no information that we have ever provided to Safeco regarding your credit score. So then I called back to Safeco and I said, you know, they don't have any information. Oh, what ChoicePoint also said, if we had provided the information to Safeco, we would have given them a reference number. So if you get that reference number from Safeco, that's a way that we can check back.
So I called to Safeco, and I told them what was going on, and they said, I'm sorry, but we don't use reference numbers. So I'm going, okay. I said, well, they say they don't have any information, and Safeco said, well, we have information. I said, can I see it? And they said, no. You have to go to ChoicePoint to get that information. So ChoicePoint never sent you information. So there I am. I kind of felt like I was between a rock and a hard place. So then I waited a couple more days. I called back to ChoicePoint, and I got a supervisor on the phone. And I said, look, I said, something's wrong here. Because Safeco, I said, I can't believe that there's this much of a disconnect. Because the Safeco guy told me how long they had been using ChoicePoint, and it'd be more than a few months. He said, something is totally wrong here. And she double-checked, and she said, no, she said, we can't find any information after I'd given her name, address, social security number, all the same search criteria again. She came back, and she said, have you ever lived in Missouri? When I was in college about 35, 40 years ago, I played basketball in Missouri one time, but that's the only time I ever recall being in Missouri. Where that came from, she didn't tell me, but she just said, have you ever lived in Missouri? I said, no, I haven't. I said, well, it's, you know, something is totally wrong here. So she called me back a day later, and she said, Mr. Schaefer, we're really sorry, but we do have information that we sent to Safeco. So where was it all the time? She said, well, we weren't doing the searches correctly. You weren't doing it correctly. You had my name, address, social security number, Oregon driver's license, date of birth, mother's maiden name. What other information do I have, other than DNA that is so unique to me that you can't find the information? And they said, well, I'm sorry, but it's a problem that we have here, and we're working on it, and hopefully we can get that squared away. I said, we are
running out of time, so... Yeah.
I said, will you please send that to me? And she said, yes, we will send that to you. It will take about 10 business days. This was 3 weeks ago. I received a letter Monday saying, I'm sorry, we could not send that information to you because we do not have a social security number or date of birth or any of that information. Meanwhile, so I called them back and I said, look, I said, well, here we are again, and got the same person. And she said, we'll try and get the information sent to you. Meanwhile, what they turned out, the important things that they said was wrong with their credit score, what they used on us, was the number of accounts we had open. Not open with balances, but just open. Okay? My wife and I have been married for 38 years. We've had credit for probably 38 of those years. We have oil company credit cards back from the 1960s that we have never bothered to close. They also said we had some account that was not paid according to agreement.
Sure.
We refinanced our house in February and had no issues whatsoever come up there. When they look at our ability to pay, the insurance company says...
Excuse me.
Mr. Schaefer, it sounds like you've been a human ping pong ball in the situation. I apologize for that. Do you have any of these letters that you've written, correspondence back and forth to the committee, by any chance?
I have some.
Would it be possible for us to get copies of those?
Yeah, if I don't have them all here, I will send those to whom?
If you could send them to Committee Administrator Megan, she can make copies.
I think that'd be helpful, and just to document your case would be great.
Mr. Schaefer, so basically you're saying that the insurance companies go through this private company ChoicePoint that is difficult to contact, and they apparently have no reason to have to deal with you since they're not a government agency. So, have you paid your new premium on your house? Do you have the option of going to a different company? Will you face this, in your opinion, will you face the same problem with another company?
My agent is an independent agent, and so I immediately said, look, give me some other options. I said, I can't believe, I know the insurance business is having a tough time right now on the property casualty side. I don't have any problems with that. I fully expected my rates to go up anywhere from 30 to 50%. I was prepared for that. I had my agent check other places, and I got another policy now in place as of the middle of April that was an increase of 30% over what I paid last year to Safeco.
So you had to go to a different company?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because the other thing that Safeco said that the reason that they raised my rates was the length of time that I'd been with them. That was another factor. So now, you know, now I'm getting right back into the whole thing. I'm getting kicked out, you know, going away from them. So if I come back later, I'm going to be, you know, a new, quote, new policyholder for them.
I see. All right, we're going to go to...
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Very, we appreciate your testimony. We're going to go to Dean, Dean Naxman, Steve.
Dean Delavan.
Yes.
I think that's what I heard you say. I'm also a consumer, and first time I've done this, and I think I'm picking up on what's happening in the insurance industry. My issue is maybe peripheral to this. It's life insurance, but as I understand it, I was speaking with the assistant to Charlie Ringo's office, Mike Salaggio, and he suggests I outlay what my circumstances were or are and ongoing. I spoke to a credit union agent, General Inquiry, about last fall regarding life insurance. In January 30th, I applied for life insurance. I did it online. That's probably my first mistake. I did use this agent. There was a provision for that. January 30th of 2003, I filled out the applications through this credit union. There was no indication whatsoever of a requirement for a financial statement. So my issue is this goes a little bit different than just credit scores. It goes into a financial statement. I took the medical exam in February 6th of 2003. I'm in excellent health. I'm as good as what you get, a little overweight, but I'm retired, pushing 57 years old. You know, parts wear out, but still in good shape. In mid-February, I received a telephone message from the agent, one of the agents that I was working with. Company wanted a complete financial statement. February 18th, I called the company regarding the financial statement, and I got the runaround. They said talk to the agent. February 26th, I went to the agent, or the agent called me, and they said they were ready to issue, and they discussed this financial statement with the company. And the company told the agent that I was uncomfortable providing the financial statement, but I made at least $50,000 a year, they'd be ready to issue. I did that. I faxed that limited financial statement to the agent. April 8th, I sent. I didn't hear anything back, so I faxed an inquiry back to the agent. April 11th, 2003, the agent left a message.
Dean, excuse me. We are limited in time. We have several other bills. If you could wrap it up in 2 minutes,
okay.
I'd appreciate it.
Okay, we'll do it. I'll just be there. On April 16th, the agent left a message. The company wanted full financial disclosure. I faxed back to the agents a question, why the flip-flop? I received the fax saying it's a standard policy. I asked, April 18th, to ask for an explanation, but just to run around, I received on April 30th a letter from the insurance company that they wanted the financial statement, and I wrote back to them just the other day to the company, why are you flip-flopping on this? And so anyway, here I am. And again, as I said, this goes a little bit deeper than the credit rating. I have always had, my wife and I have always had excellent credit rating. I suspect what Representative Merkley brought up, this is the education for me, I think they would like the financial statement so that they could at some point further sell additional insurance. I'm not interested. I know what I want and when I need it. And on the other side of all this credit rating, I'm on the side of for this bill because I think that credit rating business can be manipulated, just as Mr. Schaefer here explained. And so, anyway, this is it. That's why I'm here. And this isn't right. They need to clean up situation. Any questions?
Thank you very much. We are going to go on to the next witness in the interest of time, Steve. And please don't repeat what other witnesses have already said.
Not a problem. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Steve Dixon. I'm the consumer advocate for the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization with 25,000 members throughout the state of Oregon. We feel that we're here in support of Senate Bill 260. We feel that insurance credit scoring is an unfair practice that completely lacks transparency, and I think some of these gentlemen's testimony has attested to that. The practice has never been independently analyzed. It uses a secret methodology or algorithm that is not transparent to consumers, legislators, or other policymakers. Roughly 30% of credit reports contain errors that could lead to the denial of credit. It's unclear how insurance determinations can accurately and fairly be assessed, given that frequency of errors. Also, there is a Consumer Federation of America study that showed that one in every 20 people had a credit rate within the three separate credit bureaus, had credit scores that varied by 100 points, or up to 100 points. Another problem with credit scoring, I think Representative Merkley was right when he suggested that it is a marketing ploy. Credit information also, I might add, is very marketable out in the world today, in the business world. Income loss and illness are the foremost causes of bankruptcy. Those suffering hardships beyond their control are saddled with higher rates or denied insurance altogether. Allowing insurers to charge more to consumers who lost their jobs to corporate accounting scandals, illness, or drought in the Klamath Basin is kicking people when they're down. And clearly, insurance credit scoring is unconscionable in tough economic times. Moreover, it punishes consumers for doing things that are in their self-interest, such as shopping for the best mortgage rates. Every time your credit information is hit, that is a negative point on your credit score and could lead to you having higher insurance. Freddie Mac, a reputable mortgage lender, found that credit scores disparately impact minorities and low-income individuals. And moreover, Fair Isaac, who provides a lot of these credit scoring models to insurers, their executive vice president, Peter McCorkle, said in a Federal Reserve publication by the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago called ProfitWise that credit scoring does disparately impact people on the basis of race and income. It's unclear how credit scores are immune from disparate impact when it comes to home and auto insurance. Non-minority groups also include students and the elderly, who are oftentimes students, especially double charged, since age is already a consideration and students typically have little or no credit history. They are surcharged because of the credit scoring practice.
Yes, Steve, I'd like you to summarize. I see you are reading your testimony, but we do have it, so I'd like you to summarize it.
Well, basically, I think it's unclear how paying a bill late, and essentially that's what this argument boils down to, is paying a bill late or having, just one quick example is if you have two credit cards, one with a $100 limit and one with a $1,000 limit, and you have a $75 debt on your $100 credit card, it is unclear how, and you switch that $75 debt from the $100 credit card to the $1,000 credit card to get a better credit score. It's unclear how that makes you a better driver. I'm baffled by that. And we think that this practice is confused, inaccurate, and irrelevant at best. A lot of the correlation arguments that are given, the California Department of Motor Vehicles did a study that showed that hair color, people with darker hair, also have higher rates of claims. It's not a relevant correlation. and at worst, it's tantamount to or sort of a softer form of redlining, is what I've heard from many agents, from many consumers, and from other consumer advocates as well.
Okay, thank you so much. I want to leave time for questions for this panel. Representative Merkley.
Thank you. Mr. Dixon, can you expand? I mean, redlining is a practice of taking a neighborhood that's poor or a minority neighborhood and saying, it's a bad risk neighborhood, we aren't going to go there. Can you expand on your concern that this is a substitute for redlining?
Well, I think, and I have information with me that I would be happy to provide to the committee of the findings of the Freddie Mac mortgage lending study. And, you know, the industry will say that there have been studies that show that this simply isn't true, that it's not a new form of redlining. However, the methodology for that study was called into question by the Virginia Bureau of Insurance and also the NAIC. I have a quote, actually, of that study where they said they found the study that refutes the redlining argument as counterproductive and misleading. And so I guess basically it's not clear how credit scores have a disparate impact on people based on, you know, with low incomes or minorities for home mortgage lending, and it doesn't impact people for auto or homeowners insurance at all. And also, if I could add, new first-time home buyers and people shopping for autos, for cars, that's a very credit-intensive operation. It's sort of a front end. If you're shopping for a home, people are looking at your credit all the time. If you're shopping for a car, people are looking at your credit. That's dings to your credit. And so from the starting gate, you are penalized for, you know, actually shopping around for a better deal for a home or auto loan with higher insurance rates.
Thank you very much. Thank you, panel. We're going to need to move on to our next group. I'm going to call Betty West, Clackamas County, and Kelsey Wood of Roseburg. And I would ask you to try to keep your testimony to 2 minutes. We do have 5 other bills we are looking at. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kelsey Wood. I'm from Gordon Wood Insurance in Roseburg, Oregon. I'll be as brief as I can. My 4 points. Number one, I'm opposed to prohibition of use of credit scores. The insurance division has put together a very reasonable set of rules that many are, if not all, are incorporated in the amendment to allow for proper, reasonable use of insurance scoring. Everything can be misused, and I think these rules allow for proper use of credit scores. Use of insurance scoring provides for lower rates, and one issue by more fairly, more accurately assigning proper rating. It spreads the band of rates, higher rates to higher risk drivers, lower rates to lower risk drivers. A good example, one of my insurance companies, their marketing rep did not agree and argued with the theory of credit scoring and got his company not to accept or adopt insurance scoring for quite a number of months, more than 1 year. They suffered adverse selection from other insurers taking better clients with better scores. Their study of prior 2 years indicated that they had a 30% increase in their losses from their new submissions, and in analyzing their new submissions with credit scores, they had an overwhelming large amount of poor scores. Good indication that score has direct impact on insurance company claims. The use of insurance score keeps rates down by improving or keeping competition between insurers. Some insurers, some sophisticated or larger national insurers, are capable of marketing directly to specific zip codes, to specific income bands, specific occupations. Other less sophisticated insurers or small insurers are less able to do that. They suffer adversely because of that. With the use of credit scoring, it allows even this small company that I was talking about to be able to compete on the same level as someone like a large national insurer. By improving the prediction of future claims by use of credit scoring, it more accurately allows the insurance companies to properly rate a client. A study that one of the credit reporting bureaus provided to progressive insurance companies to entice them to consider using scoring in the early 90s proved to progressive that youth of the score better identified which drivers should have had a higher rate and which drivers should have had a lower rate, more than 40%, without the use of credit scoring. I'm free for questions, sir.
I would, Representative Shuffler, you will be next. I would like to ask, you're an insurance agent, right?
Yeah.
So when you get, do you use a private outside company like was testified, like Choice Point? And then do you have any input into what figures they're giving you, or are you just taking their score?
This is a multi-level issue. As an agency, I pre-qualify clients. I can't afford to provide all my services to any client. And in pre-qualifying, our agency uses Choice Point. If our clients have a score of less than 700, we're not able to offer them our services. If one of our clients picks one of our companies, each of our different companies may utilize a different insurance bureau. Fair Isaacs, Experian, there are a number of providers of insurance score. And each insurance company picks or utilizes or modifies a model of the insurance score. So the insurance score can and will be different depending on the insurer and the provider of the information and the model the insurer uses.
Can you then question them? If you get less than a 700, can you question Choice Point and say, how did you determine this? We want to see the information.
No, because of privacy laws, we don't have access to that information. Only the client does. However, we do assist the client to obtain a copy of their credit report, and we do assist them into identifying what may be lowering their insurance score and how they can improve their insurance score. And when they're able to improve their insurance score, we help them place their insurance.
I see. Representative Shoffler, thank you.
Where the small company you're referring to, where was it located and its clients? Where were
very close. It's Sublimity.
Representative Merklin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When you speak in your testimony about avoiding less profitable market segments being able to target your products, if you will, to those clients who are more profitable and not those who are less profitable, isn't that a form of redlining?
Representative Merkley, just to repeat what I was referring to, some national insurers, possibly Allstate would be a good example, is capable of rolling out marketing plans, very specific marketing plans. They can target pieces of marketing to specific individuals depending on zip code, neighborhood, street, income level, job occupation. That's a very sophisticated way of directing their resources to have a higher hit or sell more policies to a specific portion of the population. Many of my companies, Sublimity would be a good example, a very small company, they don't have the resources to do something like that, and they're not able to do something like that. With the rollout of scoring, it gave them an instant ability to stand on the same level of competition with a company such as the resources of Allstate.
If I can and follow on to that question.
I'm sorry, we're out of time. We're going to go to Betty West.
I have been a customer service rep for the insurance agent for 13 years, and I have seen the results of this consumer scoring, and it hasn't been a positive thing in our company at all. And this older gentleman, who is just one example of the many things that we have had go on. He was 85 years old and had an excellent score with us when he was 85 years old, which was 3 years ago, and he was in our top rating. And this year, turning 88 years old, he came into our office after getting a $200-and-some increase over a six-month period on his auto to ask why. We tried to determine that and asked him if anything had changed, any financial things changed, anything, because we could see that his credit scoring had dramatically went from the top class to the very bottom class. And he said at 88 years old, what has changed from 85 years old? You know, once you get that old, not much changes except his wife had died. But she didn't have, you know, it didn't affect his score in any way. So this was just one of those things where we could not, he talked to our marketing rep, we talked to them, could get no information as to, you know, what factors were involved that lowered his score from the very best score to the very lowest score. You know, when he still had the same, he had one checking account and one Visa card. You know, nothing else has changed. That's all he ever had. You know, when you get to a certain age, you know, like they, you know, we were told, well, it's reasonable to expect that when you get this age, you know, that your credit history will lower. Well, I don't think that your credit history changes much from 85 to 88. I mean, I could see if you were 65 and then 85 or 60 and 75, but 85 to 88, I mean, you know, they're pretty much set in their way. So this is just one of the many examples that I can tell you, you know, and then I also...
Betty, could you tell us what happened finally in that case? Was he able to get insurance?
It's very difficult when you're 85 years old to change auto insurance companies. Very difficult. Many of the private ones, you know, they have to have a health, you know, go get a health exam to even consider taking you for auto insurance. So this gentleman we've had for so many years, and, you know, he's just really know him personally, and he comes in and talks to us, and he was very concerned, and like I said in my writing here, he told me steam was coming out of his ears. He was so mad, you know, and what can I do about this, you know? And so there wasn't a whole lot we could do. Because we asked for them to, is there any factors that weren't considered that you could rerun it or, you know, anything to help this gentleman out. And we were just told there really wasn't anything that they could do for us. So, you know, he says, well, what do I do? You know, either pay it, you know, or I don't have car insurance, so I quit driving. You know, and he wasn't really at the stage he wanted to quit driving yet. So, you know, he ended up paying it. You know, but he isn't happy, and he's very, you know, letting me know, you know, after many hours of discussion, coming to my office personally, talking to me on the phone, I hear this. I mean, we spend a large portion of our day anymore fending off these questions about credit scoring. And people who have gone and said, okay, it says right here, I can get a copy of my credit score. So they order a copy. They come back and look, this record is glowing, absolutely glowing. I take it to my, you know, mortgage person, and they said, this is excellent credit. How come I'm not getting the very best score? And it says on this line, on this letter, says, you can get specific reasons why you didn't get the very best score. You know, contact your agent. We do not have those reasons. When we contact our marketing rep, they tell us they don't have the reasons, that it's proprietary, and they can't tell us what's in the box because they don't know what's in the box. You know? So how do you explain? This is my dilemma. How do you explain something which you personally can get no explanation from the company for which you're selling the insurance book? How do you explain it? You say, I don't know. That is not an answer. People don't accept. You can say, hey, you had an accident, you had tickets, you know, there's a lot of factors you can explain. But when it's something you cannot explain because you cannot get an explanation for it except for, you know, maybe you have too many revolving credits, maybe you have, you know, but the factors that I have found is when we have run this, like we ran this one person and it said too many revolving credit card accounts and too many national bank accounts. The man had no revolving credit cards and only had one checking account. So the factors that were listed there didn't even pertain to him because evidently zero was the wrong number of revolving credit card accounts.
Thank you very much. Thank you, panel. We're going to go to our last panel on this topic. John Powell, Sean Miller, and Joel Arroyo, who is the insurance administrator, and can tell us what their administrative rules are that they are proposing that we've had testimony on. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair. members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Powell, representing State Farm Insurance Companies. And Madam Chair and members, I have with me today, seated behind me, Arthur Parks, who is an underwriting administrator for State Farm here in Salem. And Mr. Parks testified on this issue on the Senate side and did a very good job there of explaining how State Farm has used credit scoring. And he is here along with me to answer any of your questions. Would like, first of all, Madam Chair, if I could, to pass out this study that was conducted at the request of the Lieutenant Governor of Texas. It's dated March 2003 on this subject.
Sure.
And, Madam Chair, again, just in opening remarks, I would simply say that if you turn to the last page of that study when it arrives at your desk in the conclusion, this study was requested by the Lieutenant Governor of the state. It was conducted to the University of Texas. It was not paid for by insurance companies, although insurance company files were used in developing the information. The conclusion is the conclusion that any credible study on the subject has come to, and that is there's a very clear correlation between the credit score or the insurance score and the propensity or the possible loss, future loss. And again, the last two sentences, I think, of the conclusion on the final page, again, are indicative of how high that correlation is. Having said that, the industry realizes that the use of credit is going to have to be put into some kind of context that meets consumer needs on the one hand and the proper rating of risk on the other hand. In any form of insurance, the initial pooling of a group for risk purposes is probably the most important single thing that is done in order to be fair to each individual being insured. If you're going to assign risk, the initial pooling before other factors are considered is extremely important. Contrary to some earlier testimony that was given in the auto insurance field, gender and age are in fact used as pooling mechanisms. When you turn 16 years old and you're a male, you're put into a pool of like people. Now, not everybody who's 16 is a lousy driver and going to have terrible accidents, but a much higher proportion of those people do have accidents, and when they do, they are more serious accidents because many times they include high speed and missing curves and those forms of accidents. So the initial pooling, before you add other factors such as what car did they drive, how many tickets have they had? Have they had an accident? Before you apply those, that initial pooling is very important. Not all 16-year-olds pay the same insurance rate. A 16-year-old with a ticket will pay a higher rate than a 16-year-old without a ticket. So before you apply those other factors, it is extremely important to properly pool people for the risk. The amendments that have been handed out to you, and their conflict amendments are yet to come, and will be ready for Friday's hearing. Try to keep the best qualities of credit scoring, and do away with those that have caused the consternation on the part of the consumers. Many of the issues that you've heard before you today are taken care of by these amendments. And in essence, what these amendments propose is to allow credit scoring in the initial underwriting process. When somebody's new to a company, that score can be used, however, only with other factors. It can't be the sole determinant of a risk, but along with other factors. And then once a person is established with a company, can no longer be used in that process on renewal, can't be used to cancel you, and that sort of thing out in the future. Other factors that directly relate to your driving behavior in the case of auto insurance, those factors would carry on and determine your future placement with that company. It also provides that if you are tiered at a higher grade level or in a substandard company to begin with, that annually the consumer has a right to be rescored and have those rates of that score apply if it would lower their rate. So it does give the consumer the opportunity to work out of a situation where their credit was used. Many of the issues that were brought up today are handled in the amendments. For example, on page 12, line 14, one thing that's prohibited is the use of the consumer's total credit line. However, the company can use the ratio of that credit line and how much debt you have. So they have to look at how much debt you have, not necessarily just how much credit you have. And Madam Chair, several of the other issues that were brought up today are dealt with these amendments. So with that, I would simply stop and be available along with Arthur to answer the committee's questions.
I think we have several. I think we'll take the testimony of the panel and then go to questions.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller, I represent the National Association of Independent Insurers. It's a property and casualty insurance trade association with 214 member companies doing business in the state of Oregon, representing about 35% of the personal lines insurance in the state. We have been working on, this is a very technical issue, as John indicated, on the use of credit. We debated the use of credit to an extensive length in the Senate. The bill that came before you, we have been working all along, not only with the Senate, but something that is going to be technically sound to adjust to the concerns that were raised in the Senate. I will reiterate what Mr. Powell indicated. Every single person that testified in the Senate committee and the issues that you heard before you today dealt with the use of credit on renewal, on re-rating an individual after they had their insurance policy. The amendments that you see before you do ban the use of credit on, you cannot cancel an individual, you cannot non-renew them, and you cannot re-rate that individual. And there's some provisions in the bill which I will talk about further that deal with the re-rating issue. I think the importance of the bill as it relates to Senate Bill 260, if it were passed by the legislature, would create market disruption. And when I talk about market disruption, what we try to do in the amendments is create a bill that's going to solve the concerns for which you just heard prior to us testifying and in the Senate, while not creating market disruption. And again, a lot of individuals get a benefit from their credit. Again, you know, it's used as a factor, and not a sole determinant, but a factor in determining their risk, along with the other factors that you've heard. So if you have a wreck or if you have a ticket but you have a good credit rating, you're actually getting a benefit from the use of credit. So again, you've heard from some folks who on renewal, cancellation, those issues which were taking care of the amendments, but you haven't heard from those that are getting a benefit, which are, and the companies that I represent, the majority of the individuals, customers, are getting a benefit for their use of credit. And again, if I could take those customers and stick them in buckets, you know, you take their risk based on their credit, and if you put them over here in buckets, and you pass Senate Bill 260 without the amendments, all of those, you're going to have rate increases, premium increases for those that have benefited. So what we try to do in the amendments is look at the issue of re-rating, renewals, and also the issue of the market disruption of those individuals that have been put in those buckets prior to the effective date of the Act and those that would be factored in under the amendments after the effective date of the act, because there is a difference there. And we need to recognize that difference, and that's one of the issues why we had to go to the insurance division and make sure that this bill is technically sound to deal with those issues. Section 4 of the bill deals with the ban of credit on non-renewal, not being able to re-rate a policy. Section 7 of the bill deals with those individuals that have been put in that bucket, used, you know, those various buckets, using those the equation with the use of credit in that equation, and how they can, upon the request of the customer to the insurance company, get a better rate. And so it does allow them to benefit at that point, be able to be re-rated and improve their rating if that's the case. And so we tried to take care of those issues. I know Mr. Ari was going to talk about those issues, but again, I'll comment that Mr. Barrows talked about hurting the elderly in the, and one of the things in the bill, I know if you do an all-out ban, for instance, the only other all-out ban that I've heard of is in the state of Maryland, where on just the homeowner side. And since the ban and the rate increases that the elderly received on their homeowners insurance, there's been efforts by elderly organizations to remove the ban and to move to something more like what you're seeing here today in the amendment. Again, the individuals that testified talked about renewals and re-rating. That's taken care of in the amendments, and you'll hear more about that. Again, I think the bill does, I'm not going to actually debate the use of credit. I know John has handed out the study, and therefore we do recognize the issues. We've heard the concern. Does the industry, you know, want change? No. But we are, you know, accepting that we need to do something and change our practices. And so I guess from the voices that you've heard, we've heard their concerns, and therefore we are have offered up the A4 amendments and would urge that you adopt those. And let's get this issue behind us. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. We'll go to Joel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Joel Lario. I'm the Insurance Administrator with the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Let me start by saying I probably should have been up here with one of the consumer panels, because as the insurance regulator, we do hear regularly now from consumers with stories like the stories that have been shared with you today. And we're very concerned about the use of credit in the marketplace, and we want it to be remedied as quickly as possible. We've been working with the insurers, the consumers, the agents, all of the different players here for more than a year now. In the end of last year, at the end of 2002, we promulgated a rule. We actually achieved consensus on certain basic protections that would address some of the issues that were aired today. Our rules don't take effect until June 1st, so they're not there yet, but they've been published and they will take effect on June 1st. And they require clear disclosure to address some of the problems that the first gentleman spoke about. They require the opportunity to correct your credit record if there are mistakes, and they also prohibit people from being canceled for bad credit. Once you're in a company, we think they ought to use your current experience with the company rather than credit if they're going to take the draconian step of canceling you. Having said all that, at the time the rules passed, our hope was that this would solve most of the problems in the marketplace and we could move on. It hasn't really, and at least one particular problem that I would urge the legislature to address, which is addressed here in the dash fours, is the problem of rate increases. That is probably the largest single complaint category we get today, is people who've been with a company for a while, sometimes for a long while, then get a rate increase that's based in whole or in part on credit, and can't really understand why this is coming to them at this point when the company already has lots of information about their experience with the company. And so we think and wholeheartedly endorse the provisions in the dash fours, which would say the ban that we put on non-renewal in our rule ought to be extended, and so you can't give people rate increases either on that basis. As has been pointed out, that the dash fours do not eliminate credit as a factor in initial underwriting. It can be used there, although as some of the speakers have pointed out, in the dash fours there are some limitations on that. It has to be used in conjunction with other factors. We like that. We don't think any factor ought to be used by itself. If some company came to us and said, gee, we think territory is such a great predictor of loss in the auto market that we're going to no longer look at what kind of cars people drive, how old they are, any other factors, we're just going to base it all on territory, we'd be pretty nervous about that. And some of the companies have kind of pushed that far, you know, in that direction on credit, and we're concerned about that. So we think that at least the dash four amendment on that is important. And then finally, on rating, to eliminate some of the more common areas of complaint, that using the number of inquiries somebody has in the credit scoring doesn't make a lot of sense. Total available line of credit, as John pointed out, doesn't make a lot of sense. So we eliminate some of those in the A4 amendments too. So we think the A4s are kind of a reasonable attempt to take another step past what has been done through our administrative rule. You asked a question earlier, Madam Chair, about other states. This would put us, you know, above most other states. A lot of states, probably 40 of them, have taken some action on credit scoring. If the A4s were the final bill that passed in this legislature, it put us in, I think, the top 10 states in terms of how, quote-unquote, tough the regulation is in protecting consumers. There are three states. Sean mentioned Maryland, which banned credit in homeowner market. And we've had some of the negative pushback that he mentions there. California banned it in auto insurance back in the 80s under Prop 103. It wasn't an intentional act at that point. That proposition simply said, here are the factors you can use. And since it didn't mention credit and no one was using credit at the time, it was a non-issue. But today it's come up as an important factor in their market. Hawaii banned it way back to the 1970s when they passed their sort of Equal Credit Act. And so there are three states out there with those bans, but those are the only three with a full ban. But let me be clear to the committee, there are enough problems with credit scoring from our perspective that should the committee choose to pass the ban bill, we would support that. We don't carry a brief necessarily for the A4 amendments. So we'd be happy to work with the committee on either of those kinds of solutions.
Well, thank you, Joe. I appreciate the work that the department has done. Done a lot of work on it way back into 2002, so I want to commend you for that. Representative Kitts, and then Merkley. And then Gallegos, and then Schaffler.
I would, I have a question here for clarification, and then a follow-up if I might. Insurance rates are determined, or can be determined, if you could answer yes or no, would be helpful, by occupation? Yes or no?
It's going to depend on the line of insurance.
Mr. Chairman, you're talking about auto, not homeowners.
Let's talk about auto insurance.
Occupation, no.
Health condition?
No.
Lifestyle?
No.
Age?
Yes.
Gender?
Yes.
Distance you drive?
Yes.
Make of your car?
Yes.
That answers that question. Follow up?
Yeah, briefly. We have briefly. Three other people waiting.
I would also take offense to stating that the minority population and the elderly population are specifically adversely affected by this. I think that's a very broad stereotype that we don't want to paint those groups with. I would also think that the elderly would have better credit at that point in their life, and they'd be more concerned about age discrimination because age is a factor, as you said. So those are my concerns. I thank you for addressing those concerns, and I thank the proponents of this bill for bringing it forward. I think it's a good bill, and I think it has worked out a good compromise.
Madam Chair, Representative Kitts, I can give you a brief answer on the question of discrimination. It hasn't been proven one way or the other. There are a number of studies out there that purport to show a disparate impact. There are other studies that purport to show none. We've had actuaries look at this at the national level, and their conclusion is that none of the studies are complete enough to make a conclusion on that point. Some people say, therefore, no one should allege it. Other people say the burden ought to be on the insurers to prove that it doesn't, but there isn't. Right now, the actuaries say there isn't clear evidence on whether it does have disproportionate impact or not.
Representative Merkley.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ariel, have you looked at this Texas study?
Yes, but only briefly.
Well, it has a couple very interesting things I'd like you to comment on. It shows correlation on page 9, a very clear correlation between credit rating and loss ratios. Now, I think even your first-year statistician will tell you correlation is not cause. It is traditional in a study of this nature to lay out all of the factors considered relevant, find out which of those have the highest correlation, remove those from the mix so that you neutralize them to see if a remaining factor actually is relevant or it is simply reflecting something else. For example, although credit rating might reflect type of car chosen to drive, which may be the real factor driving the insurance rates. This study does two things. First, it does no such effort to rule out credit rating simply reflecting other major factors. The second is, and I quote from the study itself, a common criticism of credit scoring is that it may discriminate against low-income or minority applicants. The database used in this study did not contain information related to insurance income, ethnicity, physical address, or other gross delineation of rating territory. So the results of this study cannot and do not address this issue. Does this study really bear, with these shortcomings, any particular relevance to answering the questions before us?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Merkley, to deal with your second question first, I think you're absolutely correct that the study does not demonstrate anything one way or the other on the disproportionate impact question. Again, the actuaries are unanimous on this, that there aren't any studies out there that prove that there is such an effect or that disprove it. So it's an open question. This study sheds no light on that. On the first question, I think my memory of the study is that there's some regression analysis in it of the sort that you talk about. And I got shot for saying this in the Senate, but I got to say it as the insurance regulator anyway. There is, from the actuarial community, virtually unanimous agreement that there is a strong correlation and that it holds up through regression analysis. So that just a simple question of is there actually, as a predictive model, general correlation between someone who has a bad credit score and a higher likelihood of having an accident. The studies that have been done, the actuaries are unanimous. Now, that leaves a whole number of questions open, and so I want to be clear about that. That's just one step in the process. But this notion that the correlation hasn't really been proven, the actuaries don't think that's right. They think that the correlation has been proven, and that's why in every state where we require, before companies could even use credit scoring at all, we require actuarial evidence to show the correlation in every state that's been shown to the actuary satisfaction. And that's why the issue, if there wasn't a correlation, the bill wouldn't even be here because we'd say you can't use it. So it becomes a legislative question because there is the underlying correlation. And then the question
point,
is it good public policy?
Is not cause. You didn't address that point, but we can take it up.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Merkley,
would also show correlation, but we throw it out for other reasons.
Madam Chair, Representative Merkley, you're correct. This would be analogous to race, that you'd throw it out on public policy grounds.
Representative Gallegos.
Well, I have four questions, so I'm just going to pick one, and that is on page 10, line 5, in when you're wanting to, and I think send a written notice saying why you might have had an adverse underwriting decision. But in your summary, you then have to give four of the most significant reasons. But I don't understand why you can't use the term, you know, poor credit history or a similar phrase. Is that just because you don't want to use the semantics of it, or because we're still not disclosing what's in that box of what the credit history problem was, is what I think that is. Page 10, line 12 is where that line is. It says you can't use those terms as a reason.
Madam Chair, Representative, the purpose of that is to say it's got to be something more specific than that. Some of the questions and criticisms you've heard today have to do with, well, we get this thing back, but we don't understand what it means. And so the purpose here is to say the reasons have to be reasons that are understandable to the consumer, not just a phrase that doesn't really communicate anything. Now, I have to tell you, this has been tough to implement in practice in the states that have it, but that's the intent of that language.
Follow-up? Brief follow-up. Because in B or C, there ends up being no definitive anything with respect to the credit. So when the insurer, who... That's never passed on, then, from John or Sean? I mean,
Madam Chair, Representative Gallegos, the intent of this section was identical to the rule that was promulgated by the Insurance Division, and that was the complaint that many insurance agents had was that they could not help their client know, even if they needed to get a copy of the report, for clarity's sake, because they didn't know enough about the reason. So if you just got back this and it said, oh, poor credit history, that's why. Instead of that, it has to say non-payment of bills or too high of credit already extended. So you will get, the consumer would get the exact reasons in order of importance as to why they were adversely affected. Then the consumer and the agent can say, if the consumer says, well, I've got perfect history of paying my bills, and it says I don't, then get a free copy, line 23.
You answered my question, that they do have to do this specific instead of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. We're going to Representative Toppler for the last question. I would like to tell the committee you will have until Friday. I'd encourage you to meet with these people and during that time. With additional questions, I know we have many. We just are running out of time. So, Representative Shoffler.
Thank you. If you took three states of comparable territory that use credit rating as a criteria and the three that have the ban, are the rates comparable? Is there a difference in rates? And I'm going to sneak one more in. What percentage of ratepayers are positively affected by this criteria, and what percentage are adversely affected by this criteria? Are there numbers you got for that? Or anything? If you ain't got them on you, I'll wait.
Madam Chair, Reverend Flopper, the state comparison I don't have at my fingertips. As Mr. Ariel pointed out, credit, the use of credit, the only action to ban it in recent times was in Maryland, and it was only in relationship to homeowners. Other states have limited use or no use because of earlier laws. In California, a bill had passed through the initiative process some time ago, had limited the factors, and actually states and statute factors you can use. So credit was not one of those. So it is, we could try to get some comparison. However, comparing rates in other jurisdictions is very dangerous because there are a lot of other variables. And there was another question that...
What percentage of ratepayers are positively affected and adversely affected?
Madam Chair, Representative Shoffler, I can get you that information. It all varies depending on each company. I can give you some data from some of the companies that have that analysis, but again, some people benefit, and that's what we try to do in this bill, is try to take into consideration those who benefit and those that don't benefit, and that's in the amendments. And so I'll get you that information following the hearing and the rest of the committee.
Madam Chairman, Representative Shoffler, one general comment on the question would be that use of credit scoring is primarily distributional. Issue. When companies file rate increases with us, they show what their overall rate need is, and then they have these criteria that decide who's going to pay what. Their credit scoring doesn't affect their revenue need directly. So it's basically not about how much money insurance companies collect overall. It's who they collect from. Some people win, some people lose. And in general terms, and you get more specifics from these folks, the credit scoring looks to us like most other rating factors, which is, you know, most people either neutral or gained by it, but the people who get hurt oftentimes get a more severe hit because of it. So you're probably dealing with that sort of situation, and that's where a lot of these complaints come from, because we're hearing from the people who do get hit by this, get hit oftentimes pretty hard. And like any factor, some of the people who are hit, you know, aren't good. As John pointed out, some 16-year-olds get hit. They're not bad drivers. They're just pulled into this, and there are definitely people who are pulled in under credit scoring who, you know, don't deserve to be in the pool they're in. So that's where we get the complaints.
The industry was wise to discriminate against Schaffler. A 16-year-old Mike Schaffler.
Wait a minute, is that important?
No, I just wanted to throw that in there.
Okay. Well, thank you, panel. I appreciate your work on this. Thank you, everyone. We will be bringing this bill back on Friday. I know it's been a long hearing, and I appreciate you bearing with me. We do have to be on the floor in 20 minutes, so I did need to move this along. So I hope everyone felt they had their chance to speak. So I'm closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 260. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 285, have the staff read the summary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Senate Bill 285 allows insurer or self-insured employer to request reconsideration of notice and closure for workers' compensation claim. We do have a -1 amendment, which establishes the right of the insurer to request reconsideration within 7 days of claim closure, modifies the period for reconsideration. And we heard this last Friday.
Okay, is there anyone here to testify on 285?
Lisa can come up and clarify any questions.
Why don't you give us 3 minutes or so of remarks on this?
I can be very brief, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Lisa Trussell with Associated Oregon Industries. We're supportive of the -1 amendment. They're intended to do two things. One is to put a timeline on the amount of time an employer has to appeal the notice of closure. And the second thing it does is to coordinate so that there's one reconsideration going on per claim. So it gives the carrier the right to appeal, the worker the right to appeal, and it coordinates those. So in the event they both appeal, there's still only one reconsideration instead of multiple ones going on. And we urge your support for the bill. Thank you.
All right. Questions for Lisa? Thank you very much. Discussion committee. We are in work session. Representative Kitts.
Madam Chair, I'd move the amendments to Senate Bill 2-1 amendments to Senate Bill 285 into Senate Bill 285.
Representative Kitts moves the -1 amendment into Senate Bill 285. Discussion. Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kitts.
I would move Senate Bill 285 as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves Senate Bill 285 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Gallegos?
Aye.
Representative Berard?
Is excused.
Representative
Berkley?
Aye.
Representative
Kitts?
Aye.
Representative
Rosenbaum?
Is excused.
Chair Close? Both aye. Motion carries. Senator Nelson's bill. Is anybody else on the bill? So, Representative Schaffler, would you carry this bill?
Yes, thank you.
And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 285. And I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 749 and have the staff refresh our memory on this one.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 749 allows private community care providers to participate in workers' compensation, self-insured, fully established in 1999, and it declares an emergency effective on passage. And we heard this bill last Friday, and there was no opposition.
Okay, is there anyone that wanted to speak on this bill? No one. Representative Kitts.
Madam Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 749 to the floor to due pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves Senate Bill 749 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Is excused.
Representative Berkley.
Aye.
Representative Schaffler.
Aye.
Representative Kitts.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Is excused.
Chair Close.
Votes aye. Motion carries. Is there anybody on the committee that would like to carry this? Otherwise, I will give it to, say, Merkley. All right. We'll carry the bill. And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 749. And our last bill is Senate Bill 341A. I'm opening a work session on that. The staff will read the summary. And we did work this bill already, committee, but apparently in the Senate the wrong amendments somehow got into the bill. So we've had to pull it back and try to put in the Senate amendments, which you have before you, the A3s. So please read the summary.
Sure. Madam Chair, the bill excludes employment listing services from the definition of employment agency, defines employment listing service, requires Commissioner Bureau of Labor and Industries to approve fees, contracts, and procedures of employment listing services, punishes failure to obtain approval by maximum of 60 days imprisonment and 250 fine, and it's effective July 1, 2003. The Dash 3 amendments, the Senate intended, actually the committee adopted the Dash 2 amendments, the Dash 1 amendments got into the bill, so the Dash 3s take out the Dash 1s while putting in the Dash 2s.
Say that fast three times.
So you see on page 2, it deletes lines 12 through 28 there, and it replaces it with... requires a person who operates an employment listing service to provide individual copy of fees and contracts between the service and the individual. Requires the Commission of Bureau of Labor and Industries to adopt rules relating to fees, contracts, methods of listing employment. Requires forfeiture of fees received if employment listing service violates the requirements. So the proponents of the bill have all seen the amendments and apparently didn't care to show up to say that they are not.
Representative Kidd.
Madam Chair, I would move that we accept the Dash 3 amendments that do what Megan said they did into Senate Bill 341A.
Representative Kidd moves the Dash 3 amendments into Senate Bill 341A. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Being none, so ordered.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kitts.
I would move Senate Bill 341A as amended to the consent calendar, if there's no objection, since this already appears to have been on there one time, mm-hmm. of the committee, to the floor.
Representative Kitts moves Senate Bill 341A as amended to the floor on the consent calendar with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Is excused.
Aye.
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 Is excused. Votes aye. Motion carries. And we'll close the work session on that bill. I'm sure glad we didn't do that.
Is there anything else for the committee?
Okay, seeing nothing, we are adjourned.